Welcome to the Sports Zone on WHRU-LP 101.5 FM Huntley Community Radio. I'm your host, Anthony Collada, and we've got a stacked show for you guys today following Wild Card Weekend in the NFL as we jump right into it with our moment of the week, whether it be good or bad. This week, unfortunately, it is a bad moment for the week of sports, specifically on the NBC's broadcast of Saturday night's Wild Card game between the Los Angeles Chargers and the Jacksonville Jaguars. Saturday night game, they had Al Michaels and Tony Dungy on the call. If you guys recall, last year, the NBC crew, it used to be for the longest time Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth. Well, once Amazon took over the Thursday night football, Al Michaels decided to chase the bag and go do Thursday night football on Amazon with Kirk Herbstreit. So they ended up putting Mike Tirico on Sunday night football. He's been phenomenal. I've always really liked Al Michaels. Well, we got into the playoffs, and NBC ended up having two games for the playoffs. So Al Michaels, and then they took Tony Dungy out of the studio and put him in the booth with Al Michaels, and it was just a disappointing broadcast overall. I understand from the beginning standpoint of it being kind of a drag. I mean, here, the Chargers, they went up 27-0, and it looked like the Chargers were just going to cruise to a win. Trevor Lawrence threw four interceptions in the first half, including three of which to second-year corner Asante Samuel Jr., who's really following in his father's footsteps. Samuel, with three interceptions in the first half, he's the first player in NFL postseason history to ever do that. But Trevor Lawrence just, it looked like the nerves had got to him, the bright lights, it just wasn't made for him at the time. And then all of a sudden, Jacksonville, they come by and score a touchdown with 28 seconds left before halftime. And then, you know, all of a sudden, they've got some momentum going into halftime, but they come out of halftime and it's still boring. There's no excitement, very few stories, stuff to relate to in the broadcast. And then, you know, you come out of halftime and Jacksonville ends up outscoring the Chargers 21-3. They get a two-point conversion on their final touchdown. They get a game-winning field goal with like 3 seconds left. And the whole time, it was 27-0 if you were just listening to Al Michaels and Tony Dungy. And it was boring, and there was no hype behind the third largest comeback in NFL history in the postseason. Like I said, Al Michaels, he's usually really good. I think Thursday Night Football has kind of taken away some of his greatness, especially this year. And he even said it after a couple of weeks ago on Thursday night that it's like, you know, look at the games that we are announcing. There's not much to work with. And it is true. Thursday night football games have really taken a downwards turn in terms of excitement, in terms of stuff that is happening. You see a lot of blowouts, lots of low scoring, ugly games on Thursday. And I think Al Michaels kind of fell back into that rut on Saturday, and which was a good game, and he just kind of had that same Thursday night monotone that we've heard all season long. And then you throw Tony Dungy in the booth, who I don't think he's ever been a solo color commentator. I think NBC's put him in the booth last year with a couple of people. I think Rodney Harrison and Mike Tirico might have been up in the booth with him last year, but this is the first game that Dungy did color commentary by himself, and he's not real personable. You can tell he knows football. I mean, here, he's a Super Bowl winning coach for the Colts, but just not a whole lot there. And Al Michaels even kind of pointed it out. It's like, hey, you know, you're starting to learn how to keep an audience here, as after he told a story. And it's like, you need more of that. You need more to keep the audience engaged, especially in a game that started 27-0. I mean, think about how boring the broadcast is. How many people actually turned the game off and didn't actually see the comeback? So it's just a bad moment overall. Lots of backlash to Al Michaels, Tony Dungy, and the NBC's broadcasting crew. Hopefully they continue to get better through the playoffs. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see Tony Dungy back in the booth. Unfortunately, that was the crew that we had for the third largest comeback in postseason history. As we kick over to the rest of the Wild Card weekend, we mentioned the Jacksonville Jaguars. They came back from 27-0, and Lawrence, he just didn't look good. Started with four interceptions, but came right back, answered the call, and threw four touchdowns afterwards. And he joined only Ben Roethlisberger as the only other quarterback to have four touchdowns and four interceptions in a playoff game. Roethlisberger did it 2 years ago against the Browns in the Wild Card. As for the Chargers, Brandon Staley. Report came out earlier this afternoon on Monday that his job wasn't in danger after that ugly loss, though. I mean, here you're winning 27-0 and you just let a team back in the game in the most important game. I think his seat should be hotter than maybe some reports are coming out. I think he's a great defensive coordinator, but again, leader of men. How do you let an entire team come back from 27? So I think Staley's coaching job is a little bit more up in the air than some people might realize. Though I will say I might not have the best gauge for that, because last week I said that it might look like the Cardinals move on from Kyler Murray because they fired the GM, fired the head coach. It's looking like Kyler Murray is actually going to have some say in the next coach. So a quick moment to go back to last week's show where I definitely was wrong on my prediction. And then we kick over to the other Saturday game on Saturday afternoon, where the Seahawks and the 49ers, they went back and forth during the first half. Seattle was actually winning 17-16. You could tell that Geno Smith and DK Metcalf were clicking on all cylinders. It's just after halftime, the Niners came back out and they made those adjustments. They realized, hey, we've played this team two times already. Let's go out there. Let's quit messing around and take care of business. And that's exactly what they did. They ended up winning 41-23. But the score doesn't really tell the whole story. It was a very close game. Geno threw for 253. DK Metcalf had 10 catches for 136 yards, two touchdowns. So a fantastic game from the receiver there. It's just Brock Purdy and Christian McCaffrey were just too much for the Seahawks defense to handle. Purdy, once again, he threw for 332 yards. Three more touchdowns and no interceptions. I don't think he's thrown an interception yet to this point in the season after taking over for the injured Garoppolo. Christian McCaffrey added 119 total yards and a receiving touchdown through the air as San Francisco cruises their way into the divisional round. And we take a quick second to pause for station ID. You're listening to WHRU 101.5 FM Huntley Community Radio. And then on Sunday, we had the Buffalo and the Miami game in the 12 o'clock slot, and a lot closer than a lot of people seem to think the game was going to be. It was sloppy, it was cold, and, you know, it did look like, though, it was going to go how everyone thought it would. Buffalo, they came out, two quick touchdowns and a field goal. They went up 17-0, and just like that, it's, okay, well, here we go, another blowout, but three field goals back-to-back-to-back for the Dolphins in the second quarter, and then a touchdown late in the half to kind of bring them right back into the game and even it up around 17. And then in the third quarter, they opened up the second half, forcing Josh Allen to fumble. They picked that fumble up and ran it back for a touchdown, and just like that, now Miami's up 24-7. Allen, he didn't have the cleanest of games. He had that fumble. Had a couple interceptions in the game and really allowed Miami to stay in the game and hang around. I mean, here, the way that Miami was going to pull this one out was that the Bills were going to have to play a sloppy game. They're going to have to turn it over and allow Miami to score on some short fields, and that's exactly what they did, hence the three field goals. But end of the third, fourth quarter started coming around, and Josh Allen, it looked like he settled down a little bit, started finding his receivers. He found Cole Beasley for a short touchdown, and then Gabe Davis ended up scoring the game-winning touchdown as Buffalo just barely, but they escape against Miami 34-31. And then the best game of the week came in the afternoon slot between the Giants and the Vikings, and it was a lot of offense to be expected. It was very back and forth. It was a close game. But you got the Vikings in the playoffs, Kirk Cousins out of 12 o'clock games, and it wasn't the Vikings game. The Giants just continued to dominate. The Vikings defense couldn't stop a nosebleed. I mean, Daniel Jones threw for 301 yards, had two touchdowns, and then added 78 yards on the ground. It just, he looked very, very calm, very comfortable, and he, it looked like the field was just slowing down to him. He was able to sit there in the pocket and throw his receivers open, anticipate when they were going to get there. And if the pocket collapsed, he took off and ran and picked up multiple first downs with his legs and really just had a complete control of the offense. And he really utilized Saquon Barkley out of the backfield. I think he had 5 receptions, ran for about 60 yards. He finished the game with 109 total yards and 2 scores. And it wasn't the Vikings' day. They really shut down Justin Jefferson. Adoree Jackson, the corner for the Giants, actually just came back off of injured reserve and won player of the week, won the game ball for the Giants after shutting down what's considered to be the best receiver in the NFL in Justin Jefferson. So the Giants, they're playing hot. It looks like their team is finally starting to come together. They've got everyone healthy. They didn't have any injuries, and I don't believe anyone got hurt in the game against the Vikings. So now you take a hot team, fully healthy. Now you take them into next week. They'll be facing off against the Eagles, so another divisional game there in the divisional round. So should be an intriguing matchup there. And then the final game on Sunday was between the Cincinnati Bengals and the Baltimore Ravens, who played for the second week in a row. Last week, it was Anthony Brown at quarterback for the Ravens in the final regular season game. This week, Tyler Huntley was back from injury. And it was very low scoring, very back and forth game. And really, the biggest play of the game came down to about 12 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Tie game, Baltimore, they're on the 1 yard line. So you could really tell that, hey, Baltimore might actually be upsetting the Bengals here in this one at home on the road, you know. So, but Tyler Huntley, they decided to go quarterback sneak, and rather than just kind of dive forward, dive kind of low, he decides to try to go over the top like LaDainian Tomlinson, Walter Payton style, puts the ball up in the air, and the linebacker for the Bengals knocks it out of his hands right into defensive end Sam Hubbard's hands for the Bengals, and he catches it and runs it back 96 or so yards for the touchdown and what ended up being the final score of the game. And it's just like, that's the margin of error here in these playoff games, especially when you get two teams in the same division. It's the third time they've played. They don't like each other. They're always tight, tough games. That's the margin of error. Like, literally, it's half of an inch that the football just does not cross the plane, and now it's a fumble, and now the defense runs it back for a touchdown. So Cincinnati just barely escapes there. And J.K. Dobbins, the running back for the Ravens, had quite a bit to say on Monday afternoon afterwards, complaining that he only got 13 carries. I don't blame him. He ran the ball very well. And then saying, hey, you know, we would have won that game if Lamar Jackson was playing, but Lamar Jackson still banged up. Maybe he is healthy enough to play, but he's sitting out because of that contract situation. He doesn't want to risk it like RG3 did years ago. But nonetheless, Lamar Jackson didn't play. Tyler Huntley fumbled the ball on the 1 yard line, and Bengals steal one. So a tough matchup there for the Ravens. They go home, and now who knows where they go from here. Lamar Jackson's contract's up in the air. He hasn't played in like 6 weeks for the Ravens. So who knows where he'll end up. But we look ahead to the next week's matchups, and on Saturday, the first game of the day will be between the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Kansas City Chiefs. This is another one of those matchups that you look at it and it's like, yeah, that might be a blowout. I mean, here, Kansas City's the best team in the NFL, Mahomes' best quarterback that we've seen since Brady, but I mean, obviously Brady's been playing forever, but best quarterback since Brady to really come out of the draft. Jacksonville's playing hot, though. We'll see. It'll really depend, but I'd expect Cincinnati to win by double digits. And then you've got the Giants and the Eagles game in the night clip on Saturday. I think that one will be really exciting. I would tend to lean towards the Eagles, but here, you know, just like that Bengals-Ravens game, it's the third time that these teams are seeing each other. It's a divisional game. Weather's probably not going to be the greatest in Philly. It's probably going to be cold, so anything can happen there. And then on Sunday, you've got Cincinnati in Buffalo after the coin toss. So you're going to get a rematch of that Week 17 game between the Bengals and the Bills that was canceled due to DeMar Hamlin's injury. I think that one's going to be the game of the week. Two high-powered offenses. The defenses, they're eh. But I think the offenses are really going to dominate in this one. You're going to see some high scoring, some fireworks, and I think you're going to see a little extra motivation, especially from the Bengals side, but definitely on the Bills as well, on, you know, coming back and facing that team that they only got, say, like 8 or so minutes into on week 17. So good matchup there. And then the Sunday night game closes out the divisional round with either Dallas or Tampa Bay. They play Monday night. So the winner of Dallas and Tampa Bay will travel to San Francisco to take on the 49ers. If I had to guess, I'm leaning Tampa Bay in the Monday night game, just because how do you bet against Tom Brady? And how do you kind of go against history when you see the Cowboys in their playoff history? They're not very good. They tend to choke just like the Vikings do. So between Brady and Dallas's playoff history, I'm going to take the Buccaneers in a very close game. Ultimately, I think either one of them end up losing to San Francisco next week. I think San Francisco's going to the Super Bowl. They're by far the most talented team across the board, and they've got Brock Purdy playing like a Hall of Famer and as Mr. Irrelevant. So I think the Niners end up going all the way there, but definitely something to watch out for between Dallas and Tampa Bay to see who moves on to that next week. And then as we kick over to the NBA, and with so many games throughout an entire week, I decided we were going to go top five performances every week in the NBA. So number five this week, it's going to Jaylen Brown, the shooting guard for the Boston Celtics. He scored a season-high 41 points. He also grabbed 12 rebounds in Wednesday night's win against the New Orleans Pelicans. Boston Celtics atop the conference in the East. Tatum and Brown, it looked like in the beginning of their time together that they just weren't going to fit together, but they've really learned to play together. They've got the Celtics clicking, and they have been for a couple of years. I would say that's probably your favorite in the East, along with the Bucks. Julius Randle, he scored 42 points on Sunday to give the Knicks their 11th straight win. And Randle, he's always been pretty dominant on the block. You know, he'll give you about 20, 25, and say 8 to 10 rebounds. But this year, it just seems like he's taken another step. He's continued to get better, and he put up 42. Knicks are rolling right now with 11 straight. The number three performance of the week is going to Nikola Vucevic, the center for the Bulls, as he scored 43 points on Sunday afternoon to beat Golden State. And that is the first time since 2017 that the Bulls managed to beat the Warriors. They beat them at home in Chicago. And it's one of those games that it's like, wow, the Bulls pulled that one out again. I think they have one loss combined between the Celtics, the Nets, and the Bucks. And then they just beat Golden State. But then you look at them and they lose to the Rockets and they lose to some of these terrible teams. So it's a lot of confusion going on with the Bulls right there, but Nikola Vucevic put him on his shoulders on Sunday and was able to put in 43 for the Bulls to beat the Warriors. Number two is a trio of Damian Lillard games. He scored a season-high 50 on Thursday night. Unfortunately, that was a loss to the Cleveland Cavaliers. On Saturday, the point guard, he put up 36 points to beat Dallas and snap the Blazers' 5-game winning streak. And then in the back-to-back game with Dallas on Sunday, he poured in another 40 and swept that little 2-game mini-series between the Mavericks and the Trailblazers. Damian Lillard, he continues to do it time in and time again, that he pours in points. And I like what the Blazers have done for him. They've kind of started to try to put some talent around him. It's just, I want him out of Portland, man. He's so good, but they don't have enough players. They can't push him to win and get to the finals. I think he's one of the best point guards in the league. I want to see him winning some more. And then the number one moment, actually, number one performance goes to the entire team of the Sacramento Kings as they dropped a franchise record 23 three-pointers in their win against Orlando. Harrison Barnes led the way, shooting 6 of 7, and Keegan Murray shot 5 of 6 from behind the arc as Sacramento rolls to a 20-point victory over the Magic. And we do have a little bit of a bonus one for you guys this week. The Golden State Warriors and the San Antonio Spurs set an attendance record this week at the Alamo Dome. They decided it's not the Spurs' typical home court, but it was the 50-year anniversary for the Alamo Dome in San Antonio, and when I saw the report come out that these two teams had broken the attendance record, I'm like, really? It's the Warriors and the Spurs. I think I talked about this last week. They ended up selling 63,592 tickets. It's like, wait, for a basketball game? And then I realized, I turned the game on when it was on, they're in the Alamo Dome. I was like, it makes a little bit more sense. They hold more than a typical NBA arena, and it's the 50-year anniversary. It's a special moment, hence the reason they sold it out. But at first, I'm like, the Spurs? Really? They're last in the conference. But a cool moment there to just, again, set history and pay homage to such an iconic arena, if you will. And then as we kick over to the national championship that was last Monday, not really a whole lot to talk about here. Georgia absolutely destroyed TCU. It was 65-7. And Stetson Bennett, he continued his hot run through the playoffs with 304 yards, four touchdowns. And this was a lot of conversations here regarding TCU. It was a conversation going into the playoffs. It's like, why are you going to put a Big 12 team in the three seed in the college football playoffs when the Big 12, it's one of the worst conferences in college football? Well, you know, it was proven here in the national championship. It was one of those ones that it's like you're watching them play Michigan, and it's like Big 10, they're also not one of the best conferences in college football. You got Big 10 against Big 12. Michigan, they couldn't pull it out, and now you got TCU in the championship, and it's the Big 12 against the SEC. Who the SEC? It's Bama, it's Georgia, it's Auburn. It's the top teams, and you saw about what that comes out to be as Georgia just destroyed TCU. Max Duggan didn't really have anything going. Georgia's defense was flying all around the ball. And they came ready to play, and they got their second championship in as many years. Stetson Bennett now heads to the draft. I doubt he's going to end up getting drafted. He's much older as a quarterback than you typically see coming out of the draft. I think he might end up getting picked up as like an undrafted free agent or something, just because experience. He does have some talent, and you know he's smart, but we'll see kind of what happens there. But Georgia destroys TCU in the national championship. And as we head down towards the end of our show, something that we're going to start doing to wrap up the show, we're going to call it the LeBron Watch. Because on Sunday, he became just the second player all time to score 38,000 points. So obviously the other one being Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Well, that now positions LeBron just 363 points away from becoming the NBA's all-time leading scorer. And when you think about the career that LeBron has had, he started his career number one overall pick in Cleveland. He took some really, really bad Cavaliers teams. He took them to the finals one year and kept them relevant for so many years until it was finally, hey, I've done enough carrying. I need a little bit of help. He got a little bit more than a little help. He went to Miami, teamed up with two future Hall of Famers and Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh. He brought Ray Allen, another Hall of Famer, with them and really built up that Miami Heat roster. Ended up winning two rings, making it to like four or five finals there. And then he decided, hey, it's time to go back home, go back to Akron, go back to Cleveland, and win my city a ring. And that's exactly what he did. Came back. He took they were good. I wouldn't say they were any near the best team that LeBron had played for, but he took a decent Cavaliers team, and he beat the greatest team ever assembled in the Warriors, who lost 9 games in the regular season. If you recall, that's Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, Draymond Green. They were stacked. And LeBron, they came back from a 3-1 deficit and got Cleveland their first ring. And then, you know, a couple more years in Cleveland, didn't win much, and then it was time to go to the bright lights in L.A. and, you know, kind of go back to his home. He grew up in Akron, so that was home to him, and then now he moved and lives out in L.A., so he decided, hey, I'm going to go to the bright lights, go play, carry on Kobe's legacy, continue on with all the great legends that had played in L.A., and he won the final in the bubble. A lot of conversation there on how much that actually, you know, counts. Here, They are all out there. They're all playing in the same situation, and they won the games. I don't know how much more you can say that it doesn't count. Everyone was playing in the same situation. It's been a struggle the last couple of years for LeBron and the Lakers. Anthony Davis just hasn't been able to stay healthy. But LeBron, he continues to show that he is the same player, if not a better player, than he was 20-something years ago when he was first drafted to the Cavaliers. And now he finds himself at 38,024 points and just 363 behind arguably a top five, you could argue top 10, top five, even number one for Kareem. And, you know, there's a lot of arguments there on, you know, top players of all time in the NBA, but Kareem right up there. He's held that record for a very long time, but it's looking like it'll be LeBron's time. Now, the only question is, he's got 39 games left to score 363 points. I'm thinking he's probably going to get it. Obviously, he's going to have to stay healthy. Last couple of years, he's had a couple knees, a couple ankles, some nagging stuff. But, you know, that's going to happen when you start getting up there in the age like he is. But ultimately, I would think you'd expect LeBron to break that record sometime this year. If not, I think he's going to come back again next year. I think he's going to play for maybe two or three more years, but this is how we're going to finish up these shows, at least until LeBron James breaks Kareem's record. So we're going to keep you updated every single week on LeBron James and his chase for Kareem and number one all-time in sports, or in NBA scoring. And then next week we will be back for the divisional round in the NFL playoffs. So stay tuned for the Sports Zone next week.